Today, meet a man with a mission to save Australia. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance. Now, this is one that is post covering finance and property news. And I have a very important guest with me this evening. Andy, welcome back. Nice to see you again.
Thanks, Martin. You say you have an important guest. You have a different guest on tonight? Someone else I'm not aware of?
No. So far as I'm concerned, you are very important because you are poking the bear in so many ways through this campaign, you know, standing as the New South Wales Senate candidate for the Citizens Party. And in fact, you got some coverage literally today in the AFR, which is actually quite interesting because they talk about the bank agitator running for the Senate, which I thought was interesting, but I must tell you that to my perspective, the story that we want to explore tonight is much bigger than I think the one the AFR was talking about.
Thanks, Martin. And look, a very good evening to your viewers. And it's Sunday evening here in Sydney. And I've just got back from a picnic, and I hope your viewers will understand that I'm just in a t-shirt. I certainly mean no disrespect to your audience by not being in a jacket and tie. I hope that's okay.
No problem at all. We are very informal on this channel, Andy, but it's very important to get to the critical issues rather than, you know, for substance rather than form is what I would say. I thought it was really interesting. I don't know whether you saw this, but over the last couple of days, the ABC put out a piece from their energy correspondent specifically relating to the chaos around the gas reservation. And Bloomberg Originals put out a show highlighting the economic crisis that actually Australia is facing. You know, the lucky country is losing its luck, which I thought was quite interesting because to my mind, it's pretty much the first time that the mainstream or some of the mainstream have actually been talking about some of the real critical issues that are facing the country. And underlying both of those is a set of corporate questions. In other words, what is the relationship between corporate Australia, its citizens, society, and the economic future of the country? And of course, that's where you come in.
Thank you, Martin. As I've been saying to people of late, we talk about a cost of living crisis. And I've got to tell you, when we talk about a cost of living crisis, it gives the impression of something that's acute, something that is in the here and now, something that is temporary, something that is an anomaly. This is the new normal, right? And it's not only not going to get better, it's going to get worse. Unless we change the direction that the country's in, it's going to get worse. And how do I know? Look at the United States. In the 1950s, the 1960s, and the 1970s, there was an enormous middle class in the United States. It was predominantly a middle class country. And through corporate greed, corporate dishonesty, corporate rent seeking, corporate tax evasion, and corporates undermining American democracy, Americans have lost faith in their democracy because their democracy no longer functions. The middle class in the United States has shrunk rapidly, and people are struggling more than they have ever to remain in the middle class. The lower class, the poor class, people who are poor and in a state of food and home insecurity has exploded. The amount of homeless people in the United States has exploded. The United States didn't have a massive homelessness problem in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, or probably really only really started in the 80s. Now, homelessness in the United States is just, you know, there are the equivalent of whole suburbs. And there's a small, super wealthy class that is getting obscenely wealthy. Elon Musk is worth $800 billion? I can't remember. But however much it is, Elon Musk is worth probably more than several tens of millions of people in the United States put together. And you know what they say, behind every great fortune, there lies a great crime. And Elon Musk pays no tax because he doesn't pay himself a salary. It's all a loan from his company that he never has to pay back. So he pays no tax on it. This is the route we're going down in Australia. And since we last spoke, there has been so much pork barreling and so many promises made by the Liberal Party and the Labor Party to pay people to vote for them, pay people from taxes. So that's why our taxes are so high, and propose solutions that are only going to make the problem worse, that are not tackling the problem. You know, 5%, a 5% deposit if you're a first-time home buyer. Okay, so that'll get more people into the property market. So there'll be more buyers for the same number of sellers. And what do you think that'll do to the price of property? It's not going to make it go down. It's going to make it go up. And the problem with property is that we've got boomers who have 7 or 8 or 12 investment properties, and they have a very favorable tax arrangement that favors them. And we have a bank regulator that pushes banks into making loans for mortgages, but not for businesses. It's just more of the same, Martin. It is absolutely staggering how these parties' solution to the problem that we're facing is a sugar hit. Give the voters a short-term sugar hit, make them feel that they're going to be better off for the next 6 months or the next year, so they'll vote for you. And in 5 years' time, when they're even poorer and worse off than they are now, they'll be saying, "We're in a cost of living crisis." Yeah, we've been in a cost of living crisis for 5 years. It's gotten worse. Where do you think it's going to go for the next 5 years?
Yes, the cost of living crisis is endemic and structural. I see it in my surveys. And it's interesting, it's not just those on the lower income rungs that are actually up against it. A lot of them are, but other people as well up through the income chain. Because if you look at the proportion of income that's going on the mortgage, even for more affluent households, it's astronomically high. But underlying all of this is something which Cameron Murray wrote a book called Rigged. And he basically argued that the economy is rigged. It's rigged in favor of the few, the large corporates, the corporate power who's got their stranglehold on a lot of the decisions in government. And, you know, whether you look at the gas sector, or if you look at the banking sector, or the supermarket sector, or the airline sector, it's the same trends again and again and again. And these industries have been set up in a way that benefits them so they can still make relatively large profits, but at the cost of ordinary people. And yet, I haven't heard really anything through the election campaign getting to these structural issues. It's all, as you say, sugar hits. It's all little things here, there, and everywhere. And it's interesting, I was talking to Morgan Cox. I don't know whether you recall Morgan, but he was the guy who stood up on ABC Q&A the other week and asked specifically about migration and housing. He's a renter and is finding it very difficult to get by at the moment. And he didn't really get a very good reply in the Q&A on ABC, but he's now camping outside Albo's place, the $4.6 million place, trying to make a point about housing and homelessness. And it's interesting that the police asked him to paint over Albo because he'd actually got a sign with, Albo, what about housing for everybody? There's something fundamentally structurally wrong with the way that Australia's been working for at least the last 20 to 30 years. And I don't see anything much, certainly from the major parties, that are wanting to address some of those structural issues. It's like papering over the cracks and saying she'll be right when we know it's not.
And where does it all come down to? Where does it all come back to? What's the root of the problem? Where does it all begin? And my view is that where it all begins is we can fix these problems. We can change the trajectory we're on. Make no mistake about that. Parliament is sovereign. Parliament, save for its limitations that are imposed on it by the Constitution, and I'm certainly not a constitution law expert, but save for those limitations, Parliament, our Parliament is sovereign. Our Parliament has the power to fix these problems. So why doesn't it? I'll tell you why it doesn't. In the last 10 years, corporate donations to the two major parties has totaled $260 million. Now, as you know, I'm standing for election for the Senate. I'm standing for a small party, the Citizens Party. We don't take corporate donations. We never have. We never will. And so it's extremely difficult for us to fight an election. And so we are doing the best we can, and we're working as hard as we can, and we're trying alternative channels, channels that tend to be equalizers, channels that allow you to equalize the playing field with parties that can pour millions of dollars, millions upon millions of dollars. Like now that I'm in this election, and now that I'm running for election, and I'm seeing what's going on around me, and I'm seeing what the prices are and the costs are, our competitors are pouring tens of millions of dollars, billboards, call flutes, pamphlets, incentives to volunteers, SMS messages. We looked at SMS messages. I wasn't crazy about SMS messages. It really pisses on my battery when people send me unsolicited text messages, and I wasn't really keen on that anyway. But it was going to be something like 10 cents per SMS. Well, 50,000 SMSs, that's $5,000. We're not a party that has that kind of money. And so the two major parties, Liberal and Diet Liberal, fewer calories, same great liberal taste, two sides of the same coin, two cheeks of the same ass. These parties are locked in a death grip. So there are people in those parties, there are absolutely 100%, there are people in those parties who want to do the right thing and are going to politics because they want to do the right thing. And I've worked with some of them in Parliament. Andrew Bragg in the Liberal Party, Deborah O'Neill in the Labour Party, to name but two. These are people who want to do the right thing, but they're hamstrung. They're hamstrung by a caucus that says to them, these are the guardrails, and you can't go outside those guardrails because if you do, you'll piss off our corporate donors. We cannot afford to have you piss off our corporate donors because if you piss them off, they won't donate to us. And if they don't donate to us, then we can't fight the opposition, whether the opposition is the Labour Party or whether the opposition is the Liberal Party. We can't fight them. We can't fight our opponents if we don't have tens of millions of dollars in a war chest. So sit down and shut up, right? So there's this, what Senator Elizabeth Warren in the United States calls a pre-bribe. You get the money from the corporate donors. To keep getting the money from the corporate donors, you got to toe the line, right? You can make a noise about stuff. You can make a noise about the cost of living. Don't mention Coles and Woolworths. You don't touch them. And if you do, if you mention Coles and Woolworths, get off the topic quickly and talk about setting up a task force. Don't need another task force, mate. Talk about how we're going to increase price transparency. We don't need more price transparency. We know we're being screwed. What do we need? We need a divestiture power. We need to give the ACCC a divestiture power, break these monopolies up. Nothing unfair about that. Nothing unfair about that. What's unfair is that we allowed them to become monopolies in the first place. What happened to Barlow? What happened to Franklin's? What happened to Safeway? What happened to all the other supermarket chains that were state specific? What happened to all of them? They swallowed them up. Why did they swallow them up? Because we didn't have an anti-monopoly power. So now that we've created this problem, don't turn around and say it's unfair to force a fix on the problem, which breaks up something we should never have allowed to happen in the first place. Two major parties are not going to say that because it might piss off Coles and Woolworths, right? No major corporate donors. And you know what makes it even worse, Martin? It's not actually even really a duopoly. The major shareholders of Coles and Woolworths, certainly very significant shareholders of Coles and Woolworths, the same American investment funds, BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard. It's a monopoly, man. This is a monopoly. And the only reason why State Street and Vanguard and BlackRock don't just go, well, we're both owners of Coles and Woolworths. Let's drop all this nonsense with two different brands. Let's combine them and get the economies of scale and call them Colesworth. Is because even BlackRock and Vanguard knows that it'll be pushing their luck too far if it becomes obvious that it's a monopoly. But it is a monopoly. So what's the solution to a monopoly? Economics 101. It's not rocket surgery. Break them up. Two major parties won't do that. Two major parties won't do that because not only will it piss off Coles and Woolworths, piss off Qantas. Because Qantas will turn around and go, you know what? That's not a trend we like. We don't think that's a good precedent, government running around breaking up duopolies. Because you might start with Coles and Woolworths, then you'll move on to us next. So we'll also lose our donations from Qantas, including Qantas Chairman's Lounge. Which is an absolute bugbear for me. It is an absolute bugbear for me that our politicians are such cheap whores that they've been bought off with the price of a sandwich and a Diet Coke. Right? And not only will it piss off Qantas if you break up Coles and Woolworths, it's a shot across the four major banks' bows as well. So Commonwealth and NAB and Westpac and ANZ will say, you know, this whole breaking things up. Starts with Coles and Woolworths. Could move on to us next. Productivity Commission called us a cozy four-bank oligopoly. We don't like this. So if whichever party, be it the Liberal Party or be it the Diet Liberal Party, is talking about a divestiture power, call them up. You like our donations. Sit down, shut up. So that's why nothing moves, nothing changes, and that's why I want to go into Parliament. And I'll tell you, Martin, I will not, I have not, and I will never. Accept a donation from a corporation, right? In fact, I guess the biggest risk I face if I got elected, corporation comes into my office and offers me some kind of a bribe, and then next thing I'm on an assault charge. That's the danger I face. Like, I will lose my shit because I'm so sick and tired of this. And, you know, money's not the biggest thing in my life. If it was, I wouldn't be an academic. I could be earning $500,000 in private practice. I could be earning $500,000 or $1 million as a barrister. I choose to do what I do because I'm passionate about it. Money's not my sole motivator. So, trying to bribe me is just going to make me arc up. And I think that there are absolutely opportunities, even if I was a single member representative of the Citizens Party. First of all, I will work with other people with whom I'm aligned. I've done it already. I had a meeting with a senator, maybe I shouldn't mention his name. I had a meeting with a senator on a Friday about, I guess, about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And he said to me, his words to me were, your advice is valued on both sides of the aisle. And on both sides of the aisle, people actively seek out your advice and they actively seek out your solutions. Your advice is tremendously highly valued. So, guess what? There are people in the Senate who would value my advice. And there are people in the Senate across the aisle that I can work with because I have worked with them. Bragg in the Liberal Party, O'Neill in the Labour Party, Pocock in the Greens, other Pocock who's an independent. I might not be able to work with Lydia Thorpe. I might not be able to work with that airheaded popinjay from whatever Clive Palmer's calling his party this week, Ralph Babette, who looks like Ralph from The Simpsons. I mean, he's just unbelievably stupid and hasn't asked a single important, valuable, purposeful question in the 3 years that he's been in Parliament. It's just a waste of space. Maybe the same would be Lydia Thorpe, right? She's just a nutter who's standing in the public gallery screaming at the king. It's such unedifying behavior. There are nutters in parliament, 100%. But there are enough people in parliament, in the Senate, that I can work with. And if the Senate, if the government doesn't control the Senate, which it doesn't control the Senate now, and there's even less chance it's going to control the Senate after this election, then me and three or four or five other people, it's the balance of power, boys, right? You hold a balance of power in the Senate, you can block the government's legislation. Any legislation that they try to get through Parliament, it's got to go through both houses. It's got to go through the House of Representatives, and then it's got to go through the Senate. So it gets through the House of Representatives, and then it gets to the Senate, and you block it. And you block it, and you hold the government, I'm sorry to have to say this, to ransom. And you say to them, you want your legislation to get through? Well, I've also got some wants. Also some things I want. Here are three or four reports from Senate inquiries. Bank branch closures. Financial accountability regime. ASIC inquiry. Supermarket inquiry. There are recommendations in all four of these inquiries, which you said at the time, you would do something about them. Done nothing. Guess what? You will get no legislation through Parliament until the recommendations in these four inquiries are enacted. And having seen what you did to the Greens with the Financial Accountability Regime Act, having seen how you reneged on a promise to the Greens, just very briefly, the Greens proposed an amendment to the legislation, which I'd put forward to Parliament, an amendment to the legislation which would make sure that bank executives are held accountable for fraud and theft. The government agreed to it. Government changed the legislation. Australian Banking Association called up the deputy treasurer, the assistant treasurer, Stephen Jones, said to him, forgotten who you work for, buddy. And that the fix was unfixed. Right, well, there you go. You want to get legislation through Parliament? I've got news for you, boys. I've got news for you. Your buddies, your mates, your pals, your bankrollers, your masters in the big four banks who told you to unfix that fix so that they would not be held accountable. Over. Finished. We're fixing Section 21. In the Financial Accountability Regime Act. And don't try and pull the wool over my eyes about whether it's been fixed or not. I'm a law professor. You want to take me on? Let's go. On like Donkey Kong, let's go, boys. I know how to read legislation. I know whether this thing has been fixed or not. And if it's not fixed, every other piece of legislation you're trying to get through, gone. Supermarket inquiry. We're getting a divestiture power. We're breaking up Coles and Woolworths. Blame me if you want to. If it makes it easier for me, if it makes it easier for you with your dear friends, your dear friends and masters who run and who own Coles and Woolworths, by all means throw me under a bus. They're not my friends. I'm not seeking popularity with them. I'm happy if they hate me. I draw power from their hatred. Hate me more. But we're breaking up Coles and Woolworths. Not negotiable. And if you've put stooges in charge of the ACCC, like Gina Cass-Gottlieb, who used to be a lawyer representing these companies, if you've put stooges like that in charge of the ACCC, it's fine, then we'll get a new agency. Anti-monopoly agency. And we'll ask Graham Samuel if he'll head it up. You won't control him. Or we'll ask Alan Fells if he'll set it up. You won't control him. We will find a way to do this, and I will not be deterred. And don't try, like, I know what's going on with Treasury. I know how Treasury is manipulating the government. I speak to John Hewson on a regular basis. John Hewson's a great guy. John Hewson used to be the leader of the Liberal Party. John Hewson said to me, when he was opposition leader, he frequently had to push back against Treasury because they were manipulative and they were trying to kind of get in his ear and convince him about all sorts of things that weren't correct. I went to listen to Dr. Andrew Leigh recently. Dr. Andrew Leigh's a very smart guy. He's in the Labour Party, he's a very smart man, and he's a member of no faction. And I was very surprised by what he said. When I asked him about a divestiture power for Coles and Woolworths, he said, "Well, we've taken advice from Treasury, and Treasury says it's not feasible." Yeah, and so what? That means it's not feasible, mate. Got to learn to push back. You've got to learn to put Treasury back in their box. You know, go and watch a few episodes of Yes Minister. That's Treasury boys. Manipulative, dishonest. Making sure they look after the big corporations so that they can do the revolving door thing and leave Treasury and go and get very high-paying jobs in those corporations. You've got to learn to push back. You've got to learn to say to the people at Treasury, "What do you mean? What do you mean? There's no benefit in a divestiture power. Hold on a minute. I've been a professor for a long time. Let me call some people I know. Let me call some people I know who are top economists. Let me get some top economists in here, Richard Holden and various other people. Let's have a debate about whether a divestiture power is economics 101. And when they walk up and down your ass, when they prove that everything you've got to say is incorrect, Andrew Leigh said to me they trotted out some bullshit about, oh, well, you know, the European Union was going to force Microsoft to divest from various things about the browser, and they never went through with that. Yeah, they didn't go through with that because they didn't need to, you idiot. You buy a PC today, and it's no longer Microsoft. What was the Microsoft? I can't even remember what the Microsoft browser was called. What was it called? With the E on it.
Explorer.
Explorer doesn't exist anymore. So come along from Treasury, you come along and you tell me that the European Union had no success in forcing Microsoft to divest from Internet Explorer. Internet Explorer doesn't exist anymore, you idiots. So they may not have gone through the formal process of a court-ordered breakup, but they achieved exactly the same end. So don't try and play me for a fool. And I say again, it's economics 101. What lowers prices? Competition. Do we have competition in our grocery market? No. The Productivity Commission has said it's a duopoly. And do we know that this duopoly is gouging us? Yes. The Productivity Commission has said Coles and Woolworths are the most profitable supermarkets in the world. And they've also said that since the advent of COVID, their profit margins have gone up higher than inflation. So all of this stuff, all of this absolute blithering, blathering bullshit about it's not our fault, it's the fault of our suppliers, lies. So what you've got to understand is there are opportunities here. There are opportunities to go into Parliament and make a change as long as you will not be bought off. And I'm so angry about the way our politicians get bought off that, Martin, as I say, the greatest risk I face is not getting bought off. The greatest risk is somebody tries to buy me off and I end up on an assault charge. And then you can show the public things can be done. You've got to put together a coalition of people. You've got to negotiate. Like, if I got into Parliament, I cannot be a government of one person. So you have to collaborate and cooperate with other people. Do you find the right people? You find the right people, and they are the right people. The Pococks, the Mr. and the Mrs., the David and the Barbara, Deborah O'Neill, Andrew Bragg, Rennick. I don't agree with everything Rennick's got to say, but he's a good guy. Rennick is a good guy, and he's been very badly treated by the Liberal Party, and I hope to God he gets back in. Rennick? So how many we're up to? Five. Plus me, that's six. Malcolm Roberts, again, I don't agree with everything that One Nation stands for, but Malcolm Roberts has been a mover and a shaker in things like the bank branch closure inquiry. So now we're up to seven. That could very easily be the difference between legislation getting through and not getting through. The problem I face, the Citizens Party said to me, look, if you want to get into the Senate, will you move to Tasmania? If you move to Tasmania, we'd have a very strong shot of getting you in. And I said, no, I live in Sydney. Live in Sydney. I work at the University of Wollongong. This is where my life is. We've moved a lot of times. Can't move anymore. I'm too old. So I live in a state where I think there are about 3 million voters. And I think I would need about 300,000 votes to be a contender. And I think at the last election, the Citizens Party got about 13,000 votes. So I got a mountain to climb. And I've had the most extraordinary level of support. Like it's just blown me away. The number of people who are working on my campaign for free, the number of people who are giving of their time and their energy and their passion and their insights and their knowledge to help me get elected, in the background, who are helping me manage the social media. I don't understand social media. Like I'm too old. I don't like it. I don't understand it. I don't see the point of it. It's not my thing. I've got a whole team of people doing all the social media stuff for me, all for free. When people hear what I have to say, and when they look at my track record, and my track record is, I can put my hand on my heart and I can say to you, you find a person in Australia who's been more consistent as a critic of the big four banks, of the corporatization of our democracy, of the bad and ineffective approach of our regulators over the last 12 years. If you can find someone with a more consistent record on that, vote for them instead of me. Problem is getting in front of enough people. Problem is getting my message in front of enough people, which is why I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to talk to you tonight.
Well, Andy, I think this is a very important conversation. And look, more and more people understand that the system is not working for them. And you've gone through in some detail as to why the system is not working for them. It's by design. It isn't a happenstance. It isn't just a war in Ukraine or you know, the price of oil or even what Trump's up to, right? It's by design. The Australian system is by design. It's designed to effectively make corporates more profitable. It's designed to hold people unable to achieve what they should be able to achieve, cost of living going through the roof. So unless something fundamentally changes, then we're going to get more of the same old, and of course the you know, the truth is that the two major parties, as you say, very much of the same ilk. There are a few minor differences, but they're really the same ilk. But they're all captured by the same set of processes. So what we have to do is to break that mold apart, and so as you say, the Senate is a way to do that, and you know, it's there. It's a point of leverage. And with a relatively small number, you can make a huge difference. The thing that I think comes back to me, you are so clear-eyed on what the root cause issue is and why it is that for the last 30 years, Australia has fallen apart in so many ways. And that is the critical message that we need to get out to people. So one, what the root cause issue is, but two, there's a way to fundamentally shift the dial. And that, of course, is using democracy and using the upcoming election, but only if we can get enough people to understand and to make the right choice in terms of how they vote, which is why I think this is an important conversation.
You know, Martin, something my students say in their evaluations of my teaching, something that people say to me when I give speeches at conferences, academic conferences, something that has been said to me so many times by so many people in so many different situations is they've said to me, Andy, you have an ability to cut through all the complexity and define things in a way that's very simple and very clear. And for me, it is very simple and it is very clear. Everybody's standing around debating how we should assess the couture of the emperor, and all I can see is his tinkle waving around in the wind. It's like a patient that's got a vampire, and the vampire is sucking the blood out of the patient's neck, and the patient's going, I feel a bit faint. And the doctors are doing tests going, well, you're showing up that you're anemic. Something wrong with your blood. Yeah, there's a vampire on your neck, you idiot. Take the vampire off the neck and then you'll get better. And what is that vampire? Coles and Woolworths, Qantas, Commonwealth Bank, NAB, Westpac, and ANZ, the most profitable banks by return on equity in the world. Where do you think that profit's coming from, ladies and gentlemen? It's not coming from factories that they own. It's not coming from widgets that they make. It's not coming from intellectual property that they're producing. Where are our bank profits coming from? They're sucking it out of the economy. And when people say to me, I also get a lot of flack. I also get a lot of people, oh, I don't know what you're talking about, man. I have a lot of people who say, oh, but a lot of people have got bank shares. A lot of them have got bank shares in their super. Yeah, what's going to happen to their super if you attack the banks? Let me tell you something. The amount of wealth that you have tied up in bank shares through your super compared to the amount of poverty that is being inflicted on you by the banks, like this. It is a tiny, tiny amount that you're getting back in return for an enormous amount that's being taken out of you. Those arguments are absolute bullshit. If you've got $100,000 in super, you've got half a million in super. The amount of money that you have tied up in bank shares is nothing in comparison to how much money you are losing every month in the overall cost of living that is brought down on you by banks that are sucking all of the productivity gains out of the economy. In 2019, 2018, 2019, the Productivity Commission did a survey. They reckoned that our banks are a cozy four-bank oligopoly, and they said that our banks are so profitable that they have sucked up all of the productivity gains in our economy, which is why there have been no real wage increases in the last 15 years. You think about that. 15 years of people working harder and harder and longer and longer. Adjusted for inflation, no wage increases. Why? All that profit's been sucked up by the banks. And then when we're finished with the banks, the big four consulting firms, PwC, Ernst & Young, KPMG, Deloitte. You have no idea, unless you have followed the PwC scandal very closely, and I've followed it very closely. I've appeared twice before Parliament and I've made half a dozen submissions to Parliament about the PwC scandal, which have been reflected in the Senate and Parliamentary Joint Inquiry reports. You have no idea how bad it is. Do you know what those four firms are doing is actually worse than what the big four banks are doing? Firms like PwC, who donate $4 million to the Liberal Party and the Labour Party, last time I said it was $4 million each, I think it's actually $2 million each. They donate 4 million, they donated last time we had an election. PwC donated $4 million to the Liberal Party and the Labour Party, in return for which they got $600 million in consulting work. Where do you think that's coming from? $600 million. Do you know how many schools you could build for $600 million? Do you know how many nurses you could employ for $600 million? There was a story about a kid like 19, 18, 19 years old in rural New South Wales, who was driving his ute, drove it into a tree, and tragic story. He ended up in a regional hospital in intensive care, and he died in intensive care, and there was a coronial inquest because the time at which he died, there was no nurse on duty. What do you mean there's no nurse on duty? It's an intensive care ward, right? Intensive care wards, it's like a police, why do, it's like a police station. Why do police stations have locks on the doors? Is there a time when they close? Intensive care units don't close. They run 24 hours a day. For patients in intensive care, they have to be given intensive care 24 hours a day. So you need a nurse on duty 24 hours a day. They had a nurse on duty 16 hours a day, I think it was, and 8 hours a day they didn't have a nurse because they didn't have the budget. Didn't have the budget. What does a nurse earn? $60,000, $70,000 a year. You're the finance guru, Martin. How many nurses can you, if you employed 1 million nurses, how long could you employ them for at $60,000 a year in for $600 million? Can you do that maths?
I
Would it
know
be 1,000 years?
it's a long time. It's a very
About a
long
thousand years.
time.
You'd employ 1 million nurses for what, about 1,000 years? It's a lot of money they're taking, man. And we're told that we've got to cut back on the public service. So what the Morrison government did, and this came out in the PwC inquiry, what the Morrison government did is they cut back on the public service. They cut back like crazy. And then the public service couldn't deliver the services. So guess what they did? They hired consultants at 10 times the price. They hired consultants at 10 times the price so that that ass-scratching, fornicating baboon, Scott Morrison, I don't hold a hose. Place is burning. I don't hold a hose. I'm going to Hawaii on holiday. So that Scott Morrison could tell everybody how he'd cut the cost of the public service. But he can't cut the cost because people will arc up if they go, if there are too many potholes, too many. There are already so many potholes in there. People arc up if there are too many potholes in the road, or people arc up if the hospitals aren't being staffed, or people arc up if there aren't teachers in schools. So we've got to find the service provider somehow, so we pay for it at 10 times the price from these big consulting firms. And they are just the greed and the dishonesty. It is epic and it is next level. It is gobsmacking, Martin. PwC charged Robodebt $1 million for an 8-page PowerPoint presentation. 8 slides, $1 million, $125,000 a slide. What was on the slides to make them worth $125,000 each? The GPS coordinates for the whereabouts of Prime Minister Holt, Amelia Earhart, and Elvis. How do you explain that? KPMG charged the Department of Defense $19 million. These amounts, we don't think about these amounts anymore, Martin, because we hear these amounts and they mean nothing to us. We hear terms like million and billion bandied around, that they've lost meaning and they've lost impact. Let me reinforce the impact of these amounts. Do you know how long it would take you to count to 1 million if you counted one number per second? 11 days. Do you know how long it would take you to count to 1 billion at one number per second? 32 years. In the last 10 years, we've spent $21 billion on these fraud consultancies. They charged, KPMG charged the Department of Defense $19 million to advise them on whether to build a landing strip for an air base in Antarctica. I don't know if I gave you this example last time. First off, I would want to know, the people who compiled that report, what are your qualifications? You experts in sub-zero temperature civil engineering? Because if you're not, why are you writing the report? But be that as it may, $19 million, and the report was we advise you against building a runway. Well, here, I'll show you how to save $19 million. I'll do it in 30 seconds or less. The aircraft you want to land in Antarctica, can they land on packed ice? Because if they can't land on packed ice, you can't use them. Because even if you build a runway, 10 minutes after you finish building it, it'll be covered in packed ice. So if the aircraft can land on packed ice, you don't need to build a runway. There, bang, I just saved you $19 million. And that's the exact conclusion that they came to in this report, but they charge $19 million for it. And nobody in defense goes, oh, I don't know about this, man. I just think we're just pissing the public's money against a wall. No. Why? Because there's a revolving door between defense and between every other government department and these big consulting firms. And do you know what happened to Scott Morrison? Scummo, scumbag Morrison. That piece of human filth, who, while this country was burning, was on holiday in Hawaii. And we came back to the country, he said, oh, I don't hold a hose. A billion. I'm a huge animal lover. Like it just animal cruelty and distress to animals, I find it unbearable. A billion animals, a billion died in those fires. And this dickhead was sunning his fat ass on a beach in Hawaii. But interestingly enough, when Scummo Morrison, scumbag Morrison, was finished being our worst, well, I don't know if I should call him the worst prime minister. Was he the worst or was Tony Abbott the worst? I don't know. Put them in a cage and let them fight it out. But when he was finished being one of the two worst prime ministers in the time that I've lived in this country, what did he do? Try to get a job at PwC. Revolving door, spinning. I was asked to give advice to the European Parliament. I was flown, they flew me to Brussels in 2022, and I addressed the members of the European Parliament on a European Ethics Oversight Authority, because I got the same problem in Europe, the exact same problem, the revolving door. And they've put legislation in place to stop the revolving door. And I produced research for them. I looked at solutions that have been put forward, for example, in South Korea and in other countries. And I put forward a framework for them on how to shut the revolving door. If I get to Parliament, revolving door, I'm put dynamite in that revolving door. You want to work for the public service, you uphold the public good. And if you don't like that, piss off, go and do something else. And if it doesn't pay you enough, piss off, go and do something else. But you are not going to use the public service as a stepping stone to your own personal enrichment, because it's killing this country.
So, Andy, one of the things I know that you've got a particular interest in is AMP, and you actually went to the AMP meeting. It's worth, I think, us going through just a little bit of that story because it really does highlight some of the issues you've been talking about.
Thanks, yeah, Martin. And if I may say, what I did at the AMP meeting is also evidence of what I could do in Parliament, because AMP used to be the biggest, oldest, most venerable, most respected life assurance company in Australia, Australian Mutual Proprietors. And it was revealed at the Banking Royal Commission that AMP had actually become a criminal enterprise. They were stealing from the dead. They were stealing money out of people's superannuation accounts. They were stealing money from people through financial advice. They'd lost track of how many times they'd lied to ASIC. And since then, the share price has gone from $18 a share to $1 a share. And it has destroyed the lives and the livelihoods and the retirement of so many older Australians, hundreds of thousands of them, Martin. Australians who've spent their whole lives working, who've been as honest as the day is long, who put their faith and their trust in AMP, who invested in AMP, who are too old to go back to work, who are too ill to go back to work. They've lost everything. And the problem is that they go along to AMP's annual meeting. And the directors of AMP have this little thing going. this little lurk going. And the way the lurk works is this: we pay ourselves $7 million a year each, and once a year we have to put up with some angry old pensioners at the annual general meeting, and they'll ask mumbling, confused, long-winded questions, and we'll put them back in their box, and maybe some of them will get angry with us, and we'll ignore them, or we'll say, yes, we note that as a comment, not a question. And it'll be a bit uncomfortable, but look, it's 3 or 4 hours of discomfort, which is not bad considering we're getting paid $7 million a year. So a couple of those old retirees contacted me and they said, Andy, would you mind coming to the annual general meeting? And can you help us ask a question? And can you ask some really hard-hitting questions? Sure. So I went along to the annual general meeting, and I think it would be fair to say the board didn't know what hit them. I asked them a question which, by the end of it, the colour had drained from their faces. And I'll tell you what that question was and what I said to them. 30% of their remuneration, 30% of their $7 million is based on whether AMP improves its reputation. It's called a rep track score. And how do they know whether AMP has improved its reputation? By comparing AMP with other companies and comparing AMP with the reputation of other companies. So I stood up, and this was the question I asked. I said to the chief executive, her name is Alexis George, I said to her, Miss George, 30% of your remuneration is tied to reputation. And I note that in assessing your reputation, you compare yourselves to companies like ANZ Bank. ANZ is currently under a $1 billion capital charge for its corporate governance failures, in particular, that 6 years after the Hayne Royal Commission, it is still charging fees to the dead. 500 million of that 1 billion capital charge was levied against ANZ while you, Miss George, were the deputy CEO of ANZ. Next company is Rio Tinto. Rio Tinto was warned repeatedly about the irreplaceable historical and cultural significance of Juukan Gorge, Australia's version of Stonehenge. And despite those repeated warnings, Rio Tinto blasted Juukan Gorge into oblivion, whilst professing that they are, we honour our ancestors, past and present, blah, blah, blah. The next company is Qantas, which was caught selling $500 million worth of air tickets on flights that they knew had been cancelled, on top of getting a $2 billion tax-free, taxpayer-funded subsidy called JobKeeper. And while they were getting a $2 billion JobKeeper, illegally sacked 1,700 workers. And the last company is Westpac, which paid a $1.3 billion fine for breaching anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism financing laws 23 million times, which included warnings from AUSTRAC in respect of 300,000 low-value transactions between Australia, Vietnam, and the Philippines. Low-value transactions to fund, wait for it, pay-per-view, live-streamed, viewer-directed sexual assault and torture of children and infants. That was all in the AUSTRAC case against Westpac. They were funding child pornography. And I said to her, Miss George, I'm curious to know, do you think it's appropriate, and are you proud of the fact that one third of your remuneration is linked to companies that steal money from their customers, steal money from the dead, and fund paedophilia? All the colour drained out of their faces, the whole board, they just sat there like, because, of course, once you Once you go to child pornography, that's the nuclear weapon, boy. Once you go to child porn and pedophilia, and this is what Westpac was funding, and this is what you're tied to, it's the nuclear option. And they sat there with just like. And the chairman, Michael Hirst, singularly arrogant individual, stood up and he said, "I'll answer on behalf of the board because this is a board remuneration strategy." And he was so flustered by my question that he said, "We set this," and he was using his hands a lot because he didn't know how to explain his way out of this. He said, "We use this strategy because if we used companies that have a higher reputation score, it would be too difficult for us to match that score." Well, what's that an admission of? Gotcha. So I stood up and I said, "Thank you so much for your answer, Mr. Hurst. That is the most staggering admission. You go and think about what you've just said." And his response was, he did this, he went, You know the nervous laugh that somebody does when they're trying to say, "I'm not shitting myself." And it was picked up in the Australian Financial Review by Hannah Wootton, and now it's out in the press. AMP sets one third of their remuneration by measuring themselves against the shittest companies they can find. And this is the solution, Martin. You don't achieve anything in Parliament by being Lydia Thorpe and standing in the press gallery and screaming abuse at the King. And I quite like the King. I quite like King Charles. I think he's a good guy. I'm not going into the whole, not getting involved in a Republican debate. I'm just saying, as a man, as a human being, I think he's a nice man. And I don't think that's the way to behave, to stand in Parliament and scream abuse at him from the public gallery, or do the other things that Lydia Thorpe has done, which are just ridiculous, or Ralph Babette, who hasn't asked a single question in the 3 years he's been there. The way you be an effective parliamentarian is you do the research, you find the weak spots, you get them in front of you, then you get a big stick and you beat them. And what are the consequences? Look at the PwC inquiry. Barbara Pocock, Deb O'Neill, and the guy from the Liberal Party, what was his name? Senator, the man, Senator, he's from Tasmania, I can't remember his name. Those three, they set aside party political differences. Good. Serve democracy. Don't serve your party, serve the people. They set aside their party political differences. They hammered the crap out of PwC. And what happened? PwC had to sell their government consulting business, in which they were earning $600 million a year. They had to sell it for $1. Good things are possible.
Yeah. Well, Andy, I think we're coming to the end of our conversation tonight, but I think it will be helpful in a minute or so. Just give us your pitch, the elevator pitch for anybody who's thinking of voting for you in New South Wales, of course. You know, what is the reason? What's the core reason why this is so critical?
Because we don't want to end up being an unmitigated hellhole like America. America is where it is, and they've got this tangerine baboon in charge who's not just destroying the global order and the global economy, he's destroying America's economy with these tariffs, right? All of these countries he's putting tariffs on, guess what they're doing? They're forming trade blocs with each other without America. And the reason why America's lost so much trade to all of those other countries, American businesses have shipped their factories overseas. Why? Because they were getting tax breaks. Do you know that? American manufacturers were getting tax breaks from Congress according to how many people they employed in their factories, irrespective of where the factories were. So they were getting tax breaks to shift their factories offshore. That's why America's manufacturing has died. It's not because the Chinese are so much more competitive. Let me tell you something, this nonsense about China, you can't compete with China, blah, 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 China. What about BMW? What about Mercedes-Benz? What about Volkswagen? What about the vast amount of manufacturing that goes on in Germany? Germany is still a manufacturing powerhouse and it doesn't have cheap labor, has efficient and smart labor. And that's where we could have been. And that's what I want to make sure we achieve. The fact that we're sending small businesses to the wall, it's got to stop, man. They're the engine of our economy. And where does all of this come down to? The way our politics, the way our democracy is being corrupted by big corporations. And if I get elected, I'm going to take a run up to tell these people where to go.
Andy, thank
Thank
you
you.
so much for your time and a very thought-provoking, very important conversation. And I wish you the best of luck through the rest of the campaign. I know it's going to be tough, but for anybody out there who's thinking of wanting to make a difference, here's a way of making a huge difference. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to your listeners.